This morning, America's First News starts right after this. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Stone gets prison. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Friday, February 21st. Glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Republican operative Roger Stone, confidant to President Trump, has been sentenced to 3 years and 4 months behind bars for lying to Congress and witness tampering.
A second young doctor in China has died from coronavirus. Meanwhile, stocks dropped over concerns about how the outbreak might affect corporate earnings.
Members of Congress have been warned that Russia is meddling in the 2020 election.
And as North Carolina and Virginia struggle with snow, the rest of the country wonders, where is winter?
It's been one of those winters where the cold air has just stayed up in Canada and stayed up in the Arctic, which is, for most of us, where we like it to stay. For the people who don't like snow and cold, it's for dozens of cities east of the Mississippi, it's one of their warmest winters on record.
Doyle Rice from USA Today explains the mild winter and how things could change. President Trump's longtime confidant, Roger Stone, has been sentenced to 40 months in prison for lying to Congress and witness tampering. The ruling yesterday came 2 weeks after Mr. Trump denounced the handling of the case. U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson repeatedly criticized Mr. Stone, saying he had shown flagrant disrespect for Congress. President Trump is leaving open the possibility of a presidential pardon.
They say he lied. But other people lied, too. Just to mention, Comey lied. McCabe lied.
Mr. Stone, meanwhile, wants a new trial based on the alleged bias of the jury forewoman, whose social media posts prior to the trial suggest she feels President Trump and his supporters are racist. She also praised the Mueller probe, which led to Mr. Stone's conviction. Judge Jackson, appointed by President Obama, ultimately agreed with Attorney General William Barr and other senior officials who overruled the original guidelines of 7 to 9 years for Mr. Stone. Reports this morning say intelligence officials warned lawmakers that Russia was interfering in the 2020 campaign with a goal of getting President Trump reelected. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The New York Times says, though intelligence officials have previously told lawmakers that Russia's interference campaign was ongoing, a briefing last week included what appeared to be new information, that Russia intended to interfere with the Democratic primaries as well as the general election. The Times says the disclosure to Congress angered President Trump, who complained that Democrats would use the information against him. Among the attendees, Congressman Adam Schiff, who led the recent impeachment proceedings. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Reports say National Intelligence aide Shelley Pearson told lawmakers aggressive Russian actors were continuing election intrusion from 2016 using tactics like weaponizing social media, hacking, and diminishing election infrastructures. Following the fiery Democratic presidential debate in Las Vegas, how might campaigns adjust ahead of the South Carolina primary next Saturday and then Super Tuesday on March 3rd? For some in-depth analysis, we're joined by Kendall Scudder, Democratic strategist and host of a political podcast called Pod Bless Texas. Kendall, first off, your reaction to the debate.
I think that Elizabeth Warren had a night that was do or die for her. She's been seeing herself slipping in the polls, and she came out swinging, as she should have. And I think she probably had the best performance of the debates so far for her. It was pretty remarkable the way that she was able to take on Mike Bloomberg. You know, in my mind, Mike Bloomberg's number one argument is that he is able to go head-to-head against Donald Trump and win. And when you start to see cracks in that, when Elizabeth Warren goes at him like she does, there was no doubt in my mind after watching it that Elizabeth Warren is probably the best person to debate Donald Trump. Now, is she the best one to win against him? I'm not sure, but she had a wonderful night.
Did you think that Mike Bloomberg looked prepared for the onslaught? I know they were trying to replicate what was going to happen. To be honest with you,
I just don't. He kind of seemed like a deer in the headlights, which a lot of the attacks that came at him, we'd seen them before. They weren't new. And so the idea that he wasn't prepared to address those was a bit surprising to me. I don't know whether it was just some nervousness for being on the first stage, debate stage, or what it was, but I was a little surprised. He had a really good moment when he was talking about how he was the only person on the stage that's ever started a business. And I really expected to hear a lot more of that kind of sentiment echoed, but he just got thrown off his game right at the beginning, and it showed throughout the debate in my mind.
We're speaking with Kendall Scudder, Democratic strategist based in Dallas, also co-host of a podcast called Pod Bless Texas. We're talking about the Nevada debate stage and how it impacts the campaigns going forward. What has happened to Joe Biden? As a junior observer, I sense that sometimes he can't or won't finish a thought, or he just says, well, we'll get to that later, or, you know, my time is up. What has happened?
You know, I don't think debate formats are what show Joe Biden at his best. I think that's been his challenge. You know, here in Texas, we saw that whenever Beto O'Rourke was debating Ted Cruz when he was running for Senate. Debates just aren't him at his best. Joe Biden, his strong suit is that he's very involved and experienced in policy, and he's very empathetic and a wonderful retail politician. But being able to recite things kind of in quick one-minute blurbs really isn't his strong suit. But, you know, I think he did what he needed to do, and that was don't screw it up. That's kind of been his mantra in all these debates.
If Bernie Sanders is to stay the front runner, as a number of polls indicate he is right now, how does he do at the top of the ticket come November?
There are a lot of Democratic strategists who debate that regularly. I tend to be a little bit more worried about having Bernie Sanders at the top of the ticket. I've been a down-ballot candidate before. I ran for the Texas Senate in 2018, and I know what it's like when you've got somebody at the top of the ticket that's not going to help carry their weight. So that's a little scary to me. Every down-ballot candidate that's a Democrat is going to be labeled a socialist, right? But what I'll say is that Bernie Sanders and Mike Bloomberg are very similar, as different as they are, and it's that they're both very independent people, right? Mike Bloomberg is independent on one side of the party. Bernie Sanders is independent on the other side.
The idea of a brokered convention, I know, seems to come up during every primary season. Does it have a different feel this time for you?
It does. I think it's because of the number of candidates that are potentially viable. In my mind, the number one state to watch on whether or not we're going to have a brokered convention is California. Right now, the way that the polls are laying out, there's a 15% threshold, and Bernie Sanders is the only person clearing that threshold. And if he's the only person that busts 15%, he's going to leave California with a whole boatload of delegates.
Thanks, Kendall. Kendall Scudder, Democratic strategist based in Dallas.
You're a small business owner, and there's nothing small about what you do. That's why Dell Small Business Technology Advisors give you trusted advice, one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions, like computers with Intel Core processors, servers, storage, networking, plus thousands of top-brand electronics, accessories, and software. No matter your technology needs, Dell is here to help your small business do big things. Call 877-BY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BY-DELL.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Friday. China has reported an uptick in new cases of coronavirus. Beijing announced earlier today that it has had more than 75,000 cases with more than 2,200 dead. Here in the U.S., four patients who have tested positive for the coronavirus have arrived at a hospital in Spokane, Washington for treatment. They arrived from Travis Air Force Base in California. Dr. Bob Lutz with the Spokane Regional Health District.
Sacred Heart is one of 10 hospitals in the country with this specialized treatment center. The Special Pathogens Unit has been training and preparing extensively for this type of incident since 2014.
Also, 11 of the 13 Americans who are being monitored at the University of Nebraska Medical Center after evacuating a cruise ship in Japan tested positive for the virus. Meanwhile, stocks dropped yesterday over concerns the outbreak could have more of an economic impact than first thought. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Intelligence officials have warned lawmakers that Russia is interfering in the 2020 election campaign to help President Trump get reelected. The warning raises questions about the integrity of the presidential campaign and whether Trump's administration is taking the proper steps to combat the kind of interference that the U.S. saw in 2016.
Number two.
Roger Stone, a longtime confidant of President Trump, has been sentenced to more than 3 years in prison for obstructing a congressional investigation in a case that has sparked fears about presidential interference in the justice system. Trump called the sentence unfair.
Roger has a very good chance of exoneration, in my opinion.
Number three.
The CDC has issued new advisories for travelers going to Hong Kong and Japan in the wake of the deadly coronavirus. The advisories are notably only a watch, meaning travelers should exercise usual precautions, unlike the level three issued for China on January 27th, which warns to avoid non-essential travel. Meanwhile, South Korea reported 100 new virus cases today, many of them clustered around a southeastern city, raising fears that the outbreak is getting out of control. In the capital, Seoul, officials banned major downtown rallies and shut down a big park to avoid mass public gatherings where the virus could spread. A winter snowstorm has hit portions of the Carolinas and Virginia, and over 12 million people are under some form of winter weather alert, including the Charlotte and Raleigh metro areas. This North Carolina woman's worried about the roads.
It's a little slushy, not real slushy, like it's more like the, it's just wet. But it's probably going to be black ice in the morning.
About 1 to 3 inches of snow was predicted for a large part of North Carolina and southern Virginia. And the salvage firm that has plucked silverware, china, and gold coins from the wreckage of the Titanic now wants to recover the Marconi wireless telegraph machine that transmitted the doomed ship's distress calls. Lawyers for RMS Titanic Incorporated called witnesses before a federal judge yesterday to explain why the company should be allowed to cut into the rapidly deteriorating ship to recover the device before it's irretrievable. The judge did not yet make a ruling.
That's a tough one.
I think it should come out. People would be interested to see it.
I think so, too, just because nobody's going down there to see the Titanic other than a handful of people in the entire world.
No, you won't. Yeah. If it's in a museum, it would draw a lot of interest.
Agreed. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. According to a national survey by a driver education platform, most workers use their commuting time to relax. On public transportation, 1/3 listen to music, 29% read books. But there is a small minority determined to get as much done as possible. Ann Cadet, columnist at the Wall Street Journal, has been speaking to some of them in New York City. Ann, what did you find?
These people are really on it. I came across a survey from an outfit called DrivingTest.org, and they surveyed commuters all across the country, asking them what they did during their commute, which I'm a very nosy person, so I was very curious about it. And, you know, most people are, especially people on public transportation, they're reading books and magazines, or they're surfing the Internet. And then there's a really small minority, about 8% of people are working as much as they can the entire commute. So I found a bunch of people in New York City who are people who are trying to be as productive as they can, and some of the examples to me were just really kind of wild. I talked to this one lady who is a business development director for a startup, and she has a walking commute. And every day she walks to work, but she speed walks, so she doesn't have to go to the gym after work. And while she's walking, she flexes her muscles so she gets some toning action in. She's also listening to an audio book on topics like marketing or search engine optimization or product development so she can educate herself on kind of business topics. And she's doing mindful breathing at the same time. I'm not sure how that works. And then when she stops at stoplights, she checks her email and she'll reply to her emails before the light turns green again.
Is she the one who said she gets a real dopamine rush by trying to squeeze out an email at a red light?
Yeah. I talked to another lady who commutes from Brooklyn to Manhattan, and she has a 40-minute commute. So she downloads a 40-minute NPR podcast into her phone so she can listen to that while she commutes. And at the same time, she reads email newsletters that each take her 5 minutes each, and she's checking her schedule. And then when she waits on the platform to transfer, she's still listening to the podcast, but she replies to all her Slack and email messages.
We're speaking with Ann Cadet, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called "These Commuters Stretch the Daily Grind Far Beyond 9 to 5. I was impressed with the sort of, tech savvy of the one guy, too, who rides a subway. You said he toggles his phone in and out of airplane mode?
Yeah, so in New York City, we do have Wi-Fi and cell service underground, but it's only in the stations. So sometimes you can keep your signal as your train goes from one station to the next, but sometimes the signal drops, or it can stay connected to the signal from the last station. So even though you go into the next station, you're getting a very weak signal. And we often find that if the signal connection isn't working correctly, we'll try to send a text or an email, and then later we find out that it didn't actually send and nobody got it, which is not good when you're trying to get some business done.
Thanks, Ann. Ann Cadet, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning.
Listen to us anytime on TuneIn at This Morning, America's First News with Gordon Deal, and on Stitcher at This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday, February 21. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Roger Stone gets 40 months in prison. Coronavirus deaths climb above 2,200. Authorities in St. Louis say three family members face charges after an 11-year-old gave birth. NFL Players Association will today discuss a collective bargaining agreement approved by owners. A college pole vaulter recording a workout on video cleared the bar, but the pole didn't fall away, and he wound up needing 18 stitches to repair his scrotum. And why a hug for a pizza delivery guy from a toddler meant far more than just a cute viral video. That story in about 20 minutes. A winter storm blanketed parts of the Carolinas and Virginia with snow late yesterday, and over 12 million people were under some form of winter weather alert, including in the Charlotte and Raleigh areas. Snow even fell in the mountainous areas of northern Georgia. Most were covered in a blanket of snow by the time the sun had set. Meanwhile, if you're wondering what happened to winter in the rest of the country, you're not alone. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says the first 2 months of winter, December and January, were the warmest on record across the U.S. Is there any winter in the forecast as we creep toward March? In-depth weather talk with Doyle Rice, weather reporter at USA Today. Doyle, explain what's going on.
It's been one of those winters where the cold air has just stayed up in Canada and stayed up in the Arctic, which is, for most of us, where we like it to stay. For the people who don't like snow and cold, it's for dozens of cities east of the Mississippi, it's one of their warmest winters on record, and that's something that's been quite unusual for this winter, as how mild that it's stayed for so long.
Is it easy to say, well, there you go, more proof of global warming, or it's not that simple?
Not really that simple. This year has been it's been kind of an aberration. And don't worry, there'll be winters to come where we'll get plenty of snow and cold. It just hasn't happened this winter. Although the folks in North Carolina are seeing a bit of snow, so it's not completely out of the woods yet.
All right. So I was reading your story, kind of hoping that I could embrace a new weather phrase that would make me sound smart about the weather, and I think you provided it. What is this Arctic oscillation that you weaved into the story?
That's yet another large-scale climate pattern, and it involves areas of high and low pressure over the Arctic and over the northern parts of the oceans up there. And this particular winter, it's been extremely positive. It's been a positive Arctic oscillation, and that has been yet another factor in how we've had such little amount of cold air down here. The strong Arctic oscillation puts the jet stream in a more orderly straight line, kind of it goes west to east across the north, and it doesn't allow these intrusions of cold air down here into the U.S.
And sometimes it just sort of intervenes somehow and then just sends that cold air down, the way the jet stream bangs into the polar vortex, I guess.
Yeah, the jet stream can sometimes undulate, and that's when we get these intrusions of Arctic cold down here into the U.S. And as I said, it's been a very strong west to east jet stream across the country, across the northern part of the country, and it just has not allowed these intrusions of cold air from the polar vortex to make their way down here into the U.S.
We're speaking with Doyle Rice, weather reporter at USA Today. His piece is called "What Happened to Winter and Where's the Polar Vortex?" So it struck me as odd, I guess, the polar vortex is so strong that we're not getting the cold weather.
Yeah, that's a little counterintuitive. When you hear a strong polar vortex, you think maybe that means it's going to be cold down here. But actually, the strong polar vortex means it's staying up there in the Arctic where it belongs. It's when it's weak is when it starts to undulate, and kind of some of that cold air can spill down over the U.S. So if you want a mild winter, ask for a strong polar vortex.
So does that mean then that if the polar vortex is strong and that cold weather is staying near, the polar region, does that mean it's extremely cold in Canada or unusually cold in Canada or other parts, Greenland, what else is up there, maybe Alaska or parts of Russia?
Yeah, Alaska's actually had a pretty cold, while the lower 48 have had pretty mild winter, parts of Alaska have been extremely cold this winter. And of course, Canada, you're not going to get mild winters in Canada pretty much ever. So for them, it's just been yet another cold winter. And there are some signs that we might finally get a little bit of prolonged cold snap by the end of February into the beginning of March across much of the United States. And of course, a cold snap at the end of February and early March doesn't mean necessarily brutally cold, but it's winter's isn't quite done yet. There's still at least another couple weeks where we have to worry about some cold temperatures.
So if the polar vortex is strong, the Arctic oscillation is in normal working order, what happens to make the jet stream or the oscillation change? What are those factors? Trying to avoid getting too deep into weather technology.
Yeah, it can get pretty complicated up there. Just when the pressure, the various high and low pressure systems up there, when they don't interact very well with the jet stream, it can cause it to stay pretty steady east to west, and it does not allow it to bring these cold air intrusions into the U.S.
Thanks, Doyle. Doyle Rice, weather reporter at USA Today. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Every night, local police receive hundreds of calls from burglar alarms. The vast majority of the time, they have no idea whether the alarm is real. Is there really a crime going on or not? All the alarm company could tell them is that the motion sensor went off. SimpliSafe Home Security is different. If there's a break-in, SimpliSafe uses real video evidence to give police an eyewitness account. That means police dispatch up to 350% faster. You get comprehensive protection, too. Outdoor cameras alert you to anyone approaching from outside. Entry, motion, and glass break sensors guard the inside. I recently installed SimpliSafe. The easy-to-follow instructions made the process lightning fast, and you can certainly sleep better knowing that SimpliSafe is monitored 24/7 by live security professionals. Visit simplisafe.com/GordonDeal. You'll get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You got nothing to lose. Go now and visit simplisafe.com/GordonDeal so they know our show sent you. That's simplisafe.com/GordonDeal. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Friday. It's time now for the mic drop. Some head-scratching stories with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we've told you about the ever-growing variety of Oreo cookies at your disposal with varying levels of stuff. But to this point, all that extra stuff hasn't cost us any more money. Now, things are starting to get pricey. It was recently announced that Supreme, a popular streetwear and sneaker company, had teamed up with Oreo to release a limited edition version of the famous cookie. It was later revealed that the cookies would be on sale at Supreme New York stores starting yesterday. Unlike regular Oreos, which retail for about $4 for a similarly sized package, the Supreme branded versions retail for $8. But that's just a drop in the bucket compared to the secondary sales market, which has gone apparently crazy for the cookies.
Here we go.
Listings on eBay, Gordon, have bids anywhere from $60 to the thousands, with one listing this morning, I kid you not, up to 84 bids and nearly $16,000.
For a box.
This is for a package, which has apparently three cookies in it. That's what the package says, three cookies.
Okay. What's happening here are bots.
You think
so? Or fake, falsely bidding up the price of this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously?
But somebody has bid something, you would think, at least in the thousands, you would think.
Yeah.
Somebody has bid, and somebody's going to wind up probably paying for that.
On a related note, there was, I think it was a video or a picture I saw. I forget where, but a young man had taken a bunch of Oreos, scraped all the filling off of them,
the stuff,
and stacked it.
Okay.
Into one giant cookie.
The stuff stacker?
Must have been 18 inches high. So he had one, wafer on the bottom.
Like a whole package worth of stuff, basically?
Yeah, 18 fillings of stuff.
And then
another,
cookie
cracker to cap it off on top.
Yeah. I'll see you on Monday. That'll be my whole weekend right there.
Pass me a spoon, please.
Someone wants to do that for me. And if you're someone who gave up fast food for New Year's or plans to for Lent, there's perhaps some good news. McDonald's has announced they're making a six-pack of scented candles that smell just like your favorite quarter pounder ingredients: a bun, ketchup, pickles, cheese, onions, and beef. The candles were created to celebrate the burger's nearly 50-year run. And if that's not enough, they've also released a line of merchandise that includes mittens, calendars, lockets, t-shirts, stickers, and pins to celebrate the burger. The items are available for purchase on the McDonald's Fan Club website, but the candles, as of now, are still marked on the site as coming soon. So don't get your hopes up of soaking in a romantic bubble bath accompanied by the smell of a fake burger just yet.
Hey, baby. Got us a special candle. Right?
Yeah,
what is that?
I have a lot of problems with this. One, it's just going to make me hungry, right? I don't want something that's going to make me more hungry if they smell as good as they seem. But two, to really get the full effect, you have to have them all going at once, right? You can't just have the onion one going or the bun. You got to have them all going if you really want to get the full effect.
You could hold the onions, I guess, if you wanted to, technically.
It seems like a fire hazard to me.
Do I get the sense that Uber Eats and DoorDash are in on this, right? Yeah. You smell the candles at home, suddenly you order delivery of McDonald's, right?
Yeah. Not going to get me.
13 minutes in front of the hour.
In general, I'm a win-win guy. When I have to spend hours searching for the right part, it's lose-lose. It's time lost for me and lost time for my crew. That's why I order from Grainger. With product experts that have the answers to my toughest questions and easy-to-use website to help me find the right product quickly, I can rely on Grainger to make getting supplies for my business as simple and seamless as possible. When it comes to getting things done, it's a win-win when Grainger's got your back. Call clickgrainger.com or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're a small business owner, and there's nothing small about what you do. That's why Dell Small Business Technology Advisors give you trusted advice, one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions, like computers with Intel Core processors, servers, storage, networking, plus thousands of top-brand electronics, accessories, and software. No matter your technology needs, Dell is here to help your small business do big things. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. A new poll finds that a wide share of Americans are at least moderately confident in U.S. health officials' ability to handle emerging viruses, and more express concern about catching the flu than catching the new coronavirus. The research is from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. The findings are encouraging to those banking on Americans' trust in the health officials who are ordering quarantines and travel restrictions to contain the virus that was first detected in China. Jennifer Nuzzo of the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security in Baltimore told the AP that our ability to control the virus hangs on people's willingness to accept the advice of health authorities. News of the coronavirus outbreak is pervasive, with about half saying they've heard of it or read a lot about it. People who say they've heard a lot about the outbreak are more likely to say they're very concerned about it than people who have heard less than that. But high levels of concern are still rare. 8 minutes in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
U.S. intelligence officials told lawmakers last week Russia is interfering in the 2020 election campaign by aiming to cast doubt on the integrity of the vote and boost President Trump's re-election. The New York Times says a day after the briefing, Trump rebuked Acting Director of National Intelligence Joseph McGuire for allowing his staff to appear before the committee.
Number two.
South Korea's coronavirus cases nearly doubled today, rising above 200 and making it the worst affected country outside China as the number of infections linked to a religious sect spiked. The mayor of South Korea's fourth largest city has advised locals to stay indoors.
Number three.
The coronavirus outbreak and subsequent shutdown of huge swaths of China could impact more than 5 million businesses worldwide. That's according to a new study from data analytics firm Dun & Bradstreet. Elsewhere, President Trump's longtime confidant Roger Stone has been sentenced to 3 years and 4 months in prison for lying to Congress and witness tampering after Trump denounced the handling of the case and the government trial lawyers withdrew. At a 2.5-hour hearing yesterday, the judge repeatedly criticized Stone, saying that he had shown flagrant disrespect for Congress and the court and dismissed claims he was being prosecuted for his politics. The president disagrees.
They say he lied, but other people lied, too. Just to mention, Comey lied. McCabe lied.
Trump also repeated his call for the exoneration of his former political advisor. The mother of two Idaho children missing since September has been arrested in Hawaii. 47-year-old Lori Valla was arrested yesterday on a warrant issued in Madison County, Idaho, and is being held on $5 million bail. Her children, ages 7 and 17, haven't been seen since late September, and police in Idaho say they strongly believe their lives are in danger. Police says Salo and her new husband have lied about the children's whereabouts and even about their existence. And Gap is the latest retailer to get into the secondhand apparel market following the lead of Macy's, Nordstrom, and others. Gap is partnering with resale platform ThredUp, which bills itself as the largest online consignment and thrift store. In select Gap, Banana Republic, Athleta, and Janie and Jack stores, shoppers will be able to drop off their used clothes in exchange for credits to use Gap-branded stores.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yep.
Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Grab a tissue for this one. A pizza delivery driver in Rhode Island received something more special than any tip this week. Ryan Catterson was delivering pizza to the home of Lindsay Sheely of West Warwick when her two-year-old son ran up and gave him a big hug. Ms. Sheely, who caught the moment on her doorbell camera, put it on Instagram. What she didn't know at the time is what that moment would mean to the delivery guy. His 16-year-old daughter, who lived in California, recently passed away. She had struggled with mental health. He told Q13 Fox Television that after losing his daughter last week, he was touched by the toddler's hug because it's like his daughter was there. The hug may have lasted only a few seconds, but it's a moment Mr. Catterson will hold on to always. He said he might have been his daughter looking out for him with that hug. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.